This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Part 1. The following was taken from Jacob Salter's laptop, pursuant to a court order for compliance with the FOIA and Wisconsin Open Records Law. These excerpts are presented without commentary beyond the italicized language at the start of each section, which are provided primarily to provide context for what follows. Beyond this, the utility of the information below is to be decided by the reader, but it is being posted online in an effort to spread awareness and for the common good. Below was a work-in-progress blog article that Jacob Salter was writing approximately 2 weeks before the incident, at least based on the file modified date on the document. Jacob worked as a freelance writer for several gaming and technology sites, and email correspondence shows that he'd been in talks with a couple of regular buyers of his articles about a new game he'd gotten access to. Given the game in question's lineage and the somewhat strange way in which he received it, Jacob thought he could do an interesting multi-part article on not only the game itself, but the circumstances surrounding the game's prior history and the mystery of where this new game had come from. One of the websites was cautiously optimistic, but they wanted to see a final draft before committing to payment. This, as best as can be ascertained, was the last draft of the article written by Jacob Salter. Have you ever heard of the game Malarena? If you're not, a gaming super nerd, and B, over 40, the answer may be no. I, for one, wasn't even born when it came out, and it was never widely advertised or sold in many computer stores back when those were still a thing. So what was Malarena, and why should you care? Malarena was a text-based adventure game that was released in 1988. This was years before the original Zork trilogy, which was one of the most popular text-based adventure games of the early 80s. By 1998, advancements in technology and game development had shifted more and more to graphics that, while very primitive by today's standards, were groundbreaking at the time, if for no other reason that they actually showed the worlds they created, instead of just telling about them. Ultima V, Warriors of Destiny, Might and Magic 2, Gates to Another World, and the classic LucasArts Maniac Mansion all came out during the same time period, and to the casual observer, they put a simple text game to shame. Adding to this was the fact that, like I mentioned above, Malarena wasn't a big budget or widely released game. If you could find it at all, it was usually on the dusty back shelf of some local mom-and-pop computer store or through one of the enthusiast mailing lists or newsletters that existed back before the internet became a common thing in people's homes. By the early 90s, you could find people swapping or looking for copies through a BBS here and there, and eventually that led to a rare, very expensive copy popping up on an online auction website. Through my research, the last copy I've managed to find online was sold via an internet auction back in 2009, and at the time, it sold for just shy of $40,000. But why? Why did such a weird little, kind of outdated when it was released, text game develop such a cult following? Because apparently, despite everything I've just said, the people that actually got to play it said it was like nothing they'd ever seen before. I know it sounds hyperbolic or like the dumb stuff people say on the internet forums all the time now because everything is either the best or worst thing ever, right? But I'm not talking about some angry tween trying to farm internet points. I'm talking about a grown man in his 40s who was a very successful optometrist in the Florida Panhandle. A man who, according to him, played the game in 1989 after his father managed to pick up a copy at a flea market. I tracked him down through a forum post about the game, and when he responded, this is what he said about Malarena. It wasn't like a normal game. It seemed that way at first, but the more you played it, the more you realized it was changing as you played it. Games back then, they could be long, but they were usually fairly simple. Even if you had choices or paths you could take, once you knew what those paths were, you could repeat things. Or if it was randomized, you could tell that pretty quick too. Malarena wasn't like that. It just kept going, getting weirder and darker, but also more familiar too. It would get inside your head. I started playing by watching over my dad's shoulder, and then he let me make my own save and starting out my own. We only had the one computer, and he was even more obsessed with it than I was, but I still managed to get in a couple of hours a day when he was at work or busy. By the second week, I started faking sick so I could stay at home and play it. And then one day, my dad said a password on the computer, said he didn't want me playing it anymore, that it had gotten inappropriate, though he didn't explain what that meant. I complained, both to him and my mom, but he wouldn't budge. I remember how angry and scared I felt, not getting to play. I think I hated him right then. What made it worse is that he kept playing. By the end of the month, he'd moved the computer into the basement, and he didn't leave the house much anymore. 5 days later, Mom found him down there. He'd shot himself in the head. The man went on to tell me that his mother had thrown out the computer after that, and he'd never been able to find another copy of the game since. Strange thing was, and maybe this is just something lost in a text conversation, but I almost got the feeling that he wanted to find it again, despite what happened when he was a kid. Not that I can blame the game for that, of course, and everyone processes grief differently, but yeah. Suffice it to say, I was left with more questions than answers, but I didn't feel comfortable pushing for more information given the sensitive nature of everything I'd already been told. My response email, other than thanking him for his candidness and willingness to share, only focused on a particular point that had stood out to me in his narrative. Trying not to be too pushy, I boiled it down to a single question. What do you mean the game grew more familiar? His response came the next day, and it was very brief. It's like it knows you. So, that answers what the game is, at least a little, but why did I suddenly start doing research on an obscure video game from the 80s that I'd never heard of before? What led me down this rabbit hole of PC game history and inexplicable cult following and even death? And most importantly for you, why should you give a shit about any of this? Because last Thursday, a package showed up on my doorstep. It was a small, black box, and inside was a plain red USB drive, wrapped in a coil of what looks like thick black fishing line. No return address, no message in the box, no logos or drawing or clues. My first thought is that it's a clever promotion. Devs do send me stuff from time to time, and occasionally they do get creative so they stand out from the pack. My second thought was that it could be a prank or some kind of virus, so I scanned the drive thoroughly before opening it. That didn't take long, as it only contained one 18 megabyte file. So, holding my breath, hoping it wasn't about to crash my laptop, I clicked it. Everything went black for a moment, and then an unadorned title screen appeared. The Return to Malarena. An initial internet search of the name showed no results, but it did put me on the path to finding out about the original game and everything else I've told you. I haven't figured out who made this or what it actually is, but that also means I'm not under any kind of NDA or embargo. So, I'm about to click start. and you're coming along for the ride. You find yourself in a darkened room. From somewhere close by, the rhythmic drip and drop of water echoes. To the west, you can feel the soft caress of cold, salt-laden air. You cannot see enough in the black to know which way is which, and you don't remember how you got there, but you do feel an abiding conviction that you cannot safely remain there for much longer. What do you do? Light my torch. You have no torch. Walk forward. You walk north several steps before running into a wooden surface. What do you do? Inspect surface. You inspect the wooden surface. It appears to be a door, but you cannot feel a latch or a lock, nor any other way to open it. What do you do? Inspect door. You run your hands back over the door, and you discover something that you didn't notice before. At first you think it might be a handle, but it's moving and then biting, and it's hard to tell in the dark, but it feels as though you've grasped a fat, slimy centipede. The creature has now wrapped around your wrist and is biting you repeatedly. Already your hand and arm are feeling tight with pain. What do you do? Throw off the fucking centipede. You sling your arm frantically while raking it with the other hand. After several attempts and a few more bites, you manage to fling your attacker into the dark. Its poisons are already in you now, and you feel your head swim as colors pool behind your eyes, making the darkness alive with light and hue. What do? Go backward and then west. You step back south and then turn toward the breeze you felt earlier. Moving closer, you feel a large crack in the stone wall there. What do? Explore the crack in the wall. The crack is too small for you to fit through, but the wall does seem weak here. It might be possible to push more of the loose stones aside and slide through. What do? Break wall. You need to express an action, not a result. Kick wall as hard as I can. You kick the wall with all your might, and the stones give way quickly, quicker than you expected. Carried by your kick's momentum, you tumble through the enlarged gap and find yourself falling out into the night air. Falling, falling, until you hit the icy shock of the black ocean waters below. What do? What you just read was the initial few turns after I clicked the title screen on The Return to Malarena. I admit to being a bit disappointed at first. Was this really just some indie dev's weak attempt at making a new text adventure decades after the gaming world had largely passed them by? I mean, not that nostalgia and reading games don't have their place, but come on, why the weird package and mystery for this? But then I started playing, and to my surprise, I quickly got into it. When I got bit by the centipede, I actually felt terror and disgust so strong I started imagining my arm was really hurting. When I fell into the dark ocean, there was an oddly scary moment when I felt like I couldn't breathe. In a world with 4K graphics and HDR, it's easy to discount how powerful and evocative the written word can still be, especially when what you're reading is well done. Because that's the other thing I was starting to notice. There was a complexity to the syntax here that went way beyond just triggering a simple phrase or static room description when you did an action or moved to a spot. An early example is when I moved back to my starting position before heading west. In many games, it would have just popped back up a static description of that location, likely the same description that begins in this part of the article. Instead, it not only acknowledges that I'm returning there from the north, but it is also able to make my compound command go backward and then west and incorporate it all into the game's response. That's another level of complexity and detail, to be sure, but the really impressive part is that it's done pretty seamlessly. Instead of saying you go south and then west, where the syntax is really just linking two very basic movement descriptors, going south and then going west, It says, you step back south and then turn toward the breeze you felt earlier. Again, it's not that it isn't impossible to have scripts to account for a variety of inputs and have the game use them to stitch together responses that don't sound artificial, but seeing it in what I assume is a smaller game by an indie studio is still very neat, and that level of effort and immersion definitely caught my attention as I played on. My character managed to swim to shore, narrowly avoiding a pursuing eel with a kick before climbing onto a rocky beach and heading for the nearby lights of a local village. I knew from looking around that I'd fallen into the ocean from a tower, but I wasn't sure what the tower was or why I was there. So heading into town, my plan was to play it safe. Avoid people at first when I could, look around for things to steal, and see if I could get a better idea of what exactly was going on in this world. And then someone stopped me to ask me why I was wet. Again, I was impressed by the game's design. If this was a modern RPG, something like that wouldn't have been that impressive, but for something... And that's when I realized what I was doing. I was giving the game too much credit, like it was some classic game ahead of its time, when most likely this had been made in the last couple of years. It didn't mean I should be wowed by every feature just because the creators had stuck to this ultra-retro vibe. Armed with my newfound perspective and critical eye, I started talking to this woman who had stopped me. It was strange at first. Most modern games either give your character a few static choices on how to talk to NPCs, or they don't have your character talk at all. This was not that. I could say whatever I wanted to, of course, but I assumed I still had a limited number of options or keywords that would get an actual response. For instance, the woman might give me new information if I used the word tower, but probably not if I typed lasagna. So being a curious asshole, I typed, I'm wet from working in the underwater lasagna mines of Quibia. Let's see what it does with that, I thought with a smirk. The response was immediate. The woman before you raises an eyebrow. I see that you either intend to mock me or are addled. I do not know of this Quibia place you claim to hail from, but I do know that lasagna is easier found in an oven than the murk of some sea cave. So which is it? Are you foolish, or simply a fool? Okay. So, yeah. I think you could see from this why I was kind of amazed at this point. Not only is the game appearing to understand the nonsense I wrote, but it is analyzing and responding point by point in a way that is realistic, at least in a fantasy game lingo kind of way. I won't bore you with the details, but suffice to say, I spent the next few minutes trying different things with different people, and the responses only got more impressive. The NPCs would say things that not only accurately responded to my increasingly complex statements, but they would refer back to prior statements and interactions they had observed with me and the other NPCs. And I had to swap between different people, because most of them would eventually get fed up with my nonsense and walk off or go back to what they were doing. The level of complexity I was seeing was incredible, but it was also incredibly frustrating, because I couldn't see the seams. When you're a critic, part of your job is to be able to recognize and compartmentalize the different aspects of the thing you're critiquing. You need to be able to articulate why you like or dislike something, and you need to be able to break down its parts and assess those things individually. Tell your audience what's good, what's bad, etc. In a movie, it might be the acting, the writing, and the cinematography. In the book, maybe it's the use of language, the creativity of the plot, and the quality of the dialogue used. In video games, I call it finding the seams. Sure, I'm looking at graphics and sounds, controls and game system designs, bugs, and how fun it is, but more than most things, a video game is trying to sell you a lie. You don't watch a movie or read a book really thinking you're one of the characters, but in games, the potential for suspending your disbelief is way higher. You have agency, stakes, and choices can exist that aren't possible in most other media without them becoming a form of game themselves. But most of those choices are bullshit, right? They're fake or very shallow. They're lipstick put on a pig, and that little porker is the fact that you don't really have any choices that matter in most games. You may have a few small things that you can affect, but the core experience is on rails and very confined. You're a prisoner in a very small box, and you're given the illusion of choice for the sake of the lie. The lie being, of course, that this isn't a game. It's a real world. And this isn't a character you're playing. It's you. How well these lies are told are part of the difference between a bad, a good, and a great game. Sure, there are plenty of great games without any story or dialogue or role-playing, but that's becoming less popular as gaming grows as a hobby and the technology moves from creating distractions to creating immersion to creating, what, a text-based game with such realistic AI that I couldn't trick it into showing me the scenes where the admittedly sparse front end was stitched to the digital machinery that made this game world turn and the puppets dance? It was frustrating, but also incredibly exciting. Maybe for all of its bare-bones presentation, just text, no sound, no pictures, etc., maybe this game was actually something quite special, something deserving of an actual playthrough, rather than me just trying to break it so I could feel superior in some way. So, I stopped acting like a crazy person and started responding to people like I would if I was really in that town. It was still a couple of hours before dawn, but a market was still open and people came and went. I found out more about where I was and what the tower was. This led me to find a tavern, which I passed out in front of, because apparently I'd forgotten to get help for the centipede venom. When I woke up, 3 days had passed, and I found myself in the home of the first woman I'd talked to. She was sitting next to me, applying an ointment to my bite wounds, and when I stirred enough for her to notice, she apologized for being rude at our first encounter. If she'd realized I was delirious from the venom, she would have never taken affront at my odd comments about lasagna and other things. What the fuck was this game? It was at this point that another idea occurred to me. Maybe this wasn't clever software at all. Maybe this was an MMO where people played NPCs, or at least a game with an online component that had players or people working for the game company controlling NPC dialogue some of the time. I had no idea how that would work or be affordable if you had more than a handful of people playing your game at once, but that didn't stop me from killing my laptop's Wi-Fi to see if it stopped the game from working, or at least made a difference in how they responded. It didn't. Not only that, but it continued to get more complex and interesting as I went. More than 12 hours went by IRL before I forced myself to take a break. By that point, I'd gotten a job working for a blacksmith in the town and had made friends with a local monk. The monk and the woman who had saved me, her name was Liana, were talking about going to the local woods to search for a young boy that had gone missing, and I was considered joining them while also worrying about attracting the attention of the lords that lived in the local tower I'd escaped from. I still wasn't sure why I'd been there, and I knew that staying so close without any answers was risky, but I also started to develop real relationships with... Okay, I know how nerdy this sounds, maybe even insincere. All I can tell you is, unless you play it, you won't understand. And I'm pausing part two here to go back into the game. There's a harvest festival tonight. Back after another 2 days. Been playing almost nonstop since I paused writing this part for the review 2 days ago, though I have made a point of getting sleep and eating reasonable amounts. But it's getting harder to focus on anything else, and taking time away to write is hard. If it wasn't for how I'm feeling right now, I don't know that I'd have stopped even for the few minutes it takes to write this. So how am I feeling? Confused. Confused and maybe a little spooked. I don't understand what this game really is or how it's possible, but I know it's changing. Some of it in more obvious ways. There started being sound yesterday. It was subtle at first, and for a minute I wondered if it was my imagination. But no. There are full, very high-quality sound effects everywhere now. And the feel of things has started to change, too. I don't really notice the writing itself anymore. I've gotten so used to seeing the world through language that's no longer a barrier. But that world continues to get darker and more realistic, more complex. My friends are currently trying to talk me into killing a man I've never met. I trust them, but I still worry it's the wrong choice, despite all their assurances that it's the only way to keep our town safe. My hands are trembling slightly as I write this. I know it sounds silly, but I'm afraid of what will happen if I kill this man. Of what kind of person I'll become. It's stupid, because I know it's just a game with boundaries and consequences that don't extend into the real world. I tell myself that, and for the last few hours it's helped me keep a handle on my excitement and anxiety. That small, steady reminder that, miraculous as it may be, the return to Malarina is still just a game. But then someone knocked on my door. It happened in the game. I was getting dressed to go out and hunt with Liana. I knew she'd eventually steer the topic back to the assassination of Lord Nereal. She'd already crafted a ring concealing a poison-tipped needle, after all. But my hope was that I could get some time to just enjoy myself and clear my head beforehand. Suddenly, there was a knock at the door of my room above the tavern. Simultaneously, I heard someone knock on the door to my apartment. I jumped, my head swimming for a moment at the unreality of hearing the sound both from my laptop speakers and coming from the IRL hall 50 feet away. I felt pulled in two directions, and that sense of vertigo continued as I got up and walked to the front door. I looked out the peephole but didn't see anything. Opening the door, I looked down as a small brown envelope made of rough paper fell inward from where it had been propped. Glancing down both sides of the empty hallway, I bent down and picked up the envelope gingerly, feeling the weight of something shift inside. When I shut the door back, my heart was already pounding, not because of anything that was written on the package, the skin of the paper was clean of any markings, but because, impossible as it was, some part of me already knew what I'd find inside. It was a silver ring, chased with a filigree of gold fashioned into a winding serpent. On the side of the band was the snake's head, and based on my earlier conversations with Liana, I knew to press and slide the head up to open its mouth slightly, just enough to reveal a single needle-like fang. What the fuck is this game?
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So, I have some level of technology from several years of writing about games and technology, but I don't claim to be an expert or incapable of overlooking a simple explanation for what is going on in this game. So, I invited my friend Dave over to check it out. Before you ask, yes, Dave is a professional computer expert with a knowledge of hardware, software, and information tech that goes way beyond my comprehension. He spent an afternoon looking at my laptop, watching me play the game, and even trying to download a copy from the USB stick onto his own computer, all with weird and somewhat frustrating results. So first off, the file size? The 18 megabits? That's bullshit. I mean, could you have a decent length text game of some complexity not be more than 18 megabits? Sure, you probably could, but like you told me and like I've heard sitting here while you played, you're now into audio files. Not just audio, but really high-quality layered audio with very little repetition between different scenes and people and scenarios. There's no way they're doing that for part or even all of the 18 megabits. So what does that mean? I stared at him attentively, waiting for him to continue his nerd sermon. It means either there are more files hidden under computer somewhere, or the game files are just a front end for some kind of streaming of the actual game off the internet. He raised his hand. And I know you said you turn off your Wi-Fi on your laptop, and that's great and all, but there are ways to still access your Wi-Fi while it looks turned off at a system level. That's why I killed the power to your router, too. Scanned using my phone for any other non-password protected Wi-Fi signals. There aren't any, and the game doesn't act differently or stop playing sounds even when your router powered off. So, that means it can't be coming from the internet, right? Dave frowned and shrugged. I mean, probably, yeah. Theoretically, whoever left you the game could have also set up a local Wi-Fi hotspot that is password protected with a password that only the game knows. To us, it looked like one of those other Wi-Fi spots coming from your neighborhood, but that seems very elaborate, and I think I would have seen if someone was controlling your laptop's Wi-Fi without you realizing it. Okay, so there's hidden files on my laptop then. He nodded. That seems likely, but I can't find them. I should be able to track all activity on this computer, organized by date and time. I see where you downloaded the game from the USB, but nothing seems to have been installed other than this one 18 megabit file. Even that by itself is very weird. Usually, even a small program will be broken up into a variety of component files and folders. But this? It's just one unified file, and I can't find any sign before or after of you having additional files installed that link to this game. Given more time, I could go through and account for every file on your hard drive and what it goes to, but I doubt I'd find anything different. Shaking his head, he gave a short laugh. I was still trying to go through, though. Something like this is a puzzle, and I like puzzles. But it won't let you download a copy and carry home. He stopped smiling and met my eyes. No, it won't. It's not some kind of DRM stopping it either. The USB just won't work anymore. Puffing out of breath, he gave me an irritated shrug. I don't know, man. It has to be hiding stuff or streaming it. That much I can say. But shit if I know how it's doing it. We agreed instead for him to spend more time messing around with my copy of the game, including him playing himself with my supervision. I really can't express how nervous this made me. Aside from the fact that I'd now gone 3 hours without playing other than a few minutes he watched over my shoulder, I was also handing over my character, my second life, really, to someone else. One of my best friends that I trusted to not do anything weird or destructive against my wishes, but still, I had the thought that this was what being possessed must feel like, watching as another will placed their hands over your own. Fuck, that sounds melodramatic, but it felt very apt as I watched him go out of town to visit a local fairy who had a place out on the edge of the deep woods. I was sweating after a couple of minutes, and if other stuff hadn't come up to cut his playtime short, I don't know that I wouldn't have had to end it soon before I had a panic attack. So, Dave left, and I was able to get back on and finish my journey to trade for a horse in peace. I feel like at this point I should make clear that I'm not stupid. I know addiction can be a powerful thing, and game addiction can mess people up just like other obsessions. It's been hard for me to know if my fascination with the return to Malarena is due to unhealthy addiction, or simply because the game is not only fun and compelling, but it is such a mystery in so many ways. After my conversation with Dave, though, I started to realize more might be going on than I realized. Either that someone was targeting me specifically, or I had some kind of mental health issue going on that I didn't realize. So after getting my horse, I rode back to town and went to bed without even showing it to Liana. I had to take a break, even if it killed me to do so. I took a couple of sleeping pills, but as I write this, I'm about to finally drift off to sleep after over 36 hours of being awake. The next section is a transcript of a text conversation between Dave Thresh and Holly Jenner. Thresh was the Dave referenced in the most recent part of this article, and he's been friends with Jacob Saltzer since their freshman year of college, almost 9 years ago. He's the one that provided me screenshots of this text conversation between him and Jenner. Jenner, at the time that Saltzer's article was being written, had been dating Saltzer for approximately a year. While she's not mentioned in the article at all, according to what I've learned, she had repeatedly texted, called, and visited Saltzer during his increasing obsession with the return to Mallorina, trying to first get him to just spend time with her and get out of his apartment. According to Thresh, Saltzer's isolation eventually reached the point that Jenner had reached out to him for advice. Coincidentally, this was the same day that Thresh was leaving Saltzer's apartment after the encounter described in the article above. Unlike the article, however, Thresh indicated to me and in the text conversation below that the other stuff that came up and cut Thresh's visit short was an argument between him and Saltzer over things that he had seen in the game. Dave, have you talked to Jacob recently?
Yeah, I just left his place. Why, what's up?
I'm really worried about him. He's been obsessed with that game for over a week now, and it just seems like it's getting worse. He's barely responding to my texts now, and the last couple of times I tried to go over there, he put me off. Is there something else going on? I don't think he'd cheat on me, but I'm starting to wonder. No, it's nothing like that. It's that fucking game. But I don't know what's going on either. He's fixated on it, yeah, but I'd say not to worry if it was just that. It is his job, after all, but there's something wrong with that game. What do you mean? Well, I don't understand how it's doing what it's doing, for one thing, but that's not the main thing. I think, and this is going to sound crazy, but I think this is someone fucking with Jacob. Like, directly targeting him now. Oh my god. Why? I mean, why do you think that? Because in that game, Jacob's trying to be convinced to kill a character named Lord Nareel. Yeah? So, isn't that the kind of stuff you do in those games? Okay, so maybe he hasn't told you. Told me what? Spit it out. I'm really worried about him. Holly, in college, we were both friends with this guy, George. The three of us were really tight until junior year. That's when he pretty much blew up Jacob's life. What do you mean blew up his life? Look, I'm not going to give you all the details right now. That's for Jacob to tell you if he wants to, but I will tell you that Jacob has a lot of reasons to hate him. Maybe even want him dead. Okay, I'm freaked out now, but I still don't understand what that has to do with the game. Because George's last name was Nareel. And George is just what he wanted to be called because he'd been picked on in school for his real first name. What was it? Gaylord. His name was Gaylord Nareel. And I'm starting to think that someone is trying to get Jacob to murder him. The following is a transcript of an audio recording made by Dave Thresh with Jacob the day after his text conversation with Jacob's girlfriend. Okay. So, today is April 29th. I'm recording because I'm about to talk to my friend Jacob, and I want there to be a record of what he says and acts like. Not because I want to get him in trouble or anything, but I'm afraid if he's acting weird and crazy, and I don't have some proof to show him or other people, I can't get him help or stop him from... Well, I just don't want anyone getting hurt.
Open up, man. It's me, Dave. Dude, come on. I'm not leaving without talking to you, and I know you're in there.
Jacob responds, but it's muffled,
possibly through a door. I'm fine, but I'm busy. I'll talk to you later. No, man, look, I'm worried about you, okay? Just let me in to talk for a few minutes and then I'll leave you alone. Fine, fine, come in. I don't know what you're worried about, man. I'm just busy. I've got deadlines, you know? Look, you've got your proof of life, so can I just get back to... Wait, no, don't go... Jesus, it stinks in here. You need to stop playing that fucking... Wait, what's that? Did you finally stop playing that Malarina shit and start a new game? No. That's still the return to Malarina. So what, they sent you the real game now or something? The tech stuff was just a teaser? How does that make any... No, I haven't gotten anything else. The game just keeps changing. Now it's this. That's not possible. You had to have reconnected to the internet and it's downloaded and installed it. It's really clever, but why would anyone hide something like this behind that lame tech stuff? I haven't reconnected anything since you left. I've been in the game this whole time. To be honest, I don't even know when it started changing into the 3D graphics stuff. I guess I was so into the game, I was seeing it in my head already. It's just like I pictured anyway. Okay, now I'm starting to think you're fucking with me. These graphics, they're better than pretty much anything I've ever seen. I don't know how they've done it, or you've done it, or whatever, but they're like looking through a window into a real fucking world. It's not a window, it's... And I know you can't program this kind of stuff. I don't know who can, but I'm starting to feel like I'm getting pranked or something, though I don't know how or why you do that. No one's pranking you. It's all real. Malarina is more real than this fucking shit. That right fucking there. That's why I'm over here. Whatever weird hold this game has on you, it has to stop. Are you going to hurt George? Why would you think that? Because the game has been telling you to kill Lord Nereal, and we both know who that is. And because you've always hated George since he got you to take that drug charge for him. He paid you, sure, but you got expelled. It puts you down a path, and I've always felt like you hated him for it, and I don't blame you. I don't care about Nereal at all. Well, that's not the impression I've gotten, but either way, why is this game telling you to kill him? I'll tell you what I think. I think someone's fucking with you, and you're giving into it. And you have to stop before someone gets hurt. I'm done with Nereal. I've got nothing to worry about. What do you mean you're done with him? What did you do? I mailed him the USB drive. George always liked old school games. Okay, well, the USB doesn't even work anymore, remember? It'll work for him. Okay. Do you have a number for him? Nope. Just an address. 687 Tower Road. It's all on that note there. Okay. Okay, look, I'm going to try and contact him. Make sure he's okay and warn him about what's coming in the mail. I'm doing that because my only alternative is to call the cops, and I don't want to do that if we can help it, right? Sure, Dave. But I also don't want to leave you alone while I go check on this. I think you're sick, and I want to get you help. Is it okay if I get Holly over here to keep you company while I get back and we can figure all this out? That sounds just fine, Dave. Okay. I texted Holly. She's on her way over. Are you good for now? Can you stay off the game for a bit and let her in when she gets here? Yep. I'll be glad to see her. Hang out. Okay. I'll be back as soon as I track down George. Shouldn't be more than a few hours. See you soon. Bye, Dave.
The first 911 call came 11 hours later at approximately 11:31 p.m. Dave Thresh had driven 5 hours away from the home of Gaylord George in Rio. When he had not contacted the authorities during his trip, he had tried several ways of finding a number to Miss Rio. Unfortunately, being the son of a diplomat and the wealthy individual in his own right, Mr. Rio kept a low profile and was not easily found. It is still unknown how Jacob got the address in the first place, but according to later interviews with Dave, it was, in fact, Mr. Rio's home. He went up and rang the doorbell, half expecting no one to answer, either because they were out for some other more troubling reason. Dave kept stressing in his interviews that while he allowed for the possibility that Jacob was lying about sending Nereo the USB, he chalked up to any idea that he'd actually hurt Nereo physically as just a far-flung irrational worry. He didn't think Jacob had a mean bone in his body, and if he'd been concerned he'd really been violent, he never would have left him alone or had Holly go over there. When George and Nereo opened the door, Dave said he hugged him. This is despite the fact that he'd cut all ties with the man after the chain of events that led to Jacob's expulsion from college. Nereo apparently didn't even recognize him for a few startled moments as he tried to push him off. Once he did, however, his demeanor changed and he welcomed Dave inside. Dave said they talked for about an hour, partially about what Jacob was going through and partially Nereo's own guilt at his role and how things had played out years before. He assured Dave that he'd become a more mature and better person since then, and that he desperately wanted to give Jacob whatever he needed, both personally and professionally, to atone for his past wrongs and see their mutual friend become happier and more successful version of himself that he deserved to be. Dave said he left things vague but positive with George. It wasn't for him to say what help Jacob would or wouldn't accept from the man, and his main goal had just been to make sure Jacob hadn't hurt him and warn him about the USB that might be coming in the mail. He just told him that it was a dangerous computer virus, but George had seemed to understand that the USB stick shouldn't be used when it came. On the long drive back, he tried calling Jacob and Holly, but got no answer. She texted him shortly after she'd arrived that everything was okay, but that had been hours before, and there was no word from either of them since. Telling himself that everything was okay, he returned to Jacob's apartment as quickly as he could. Once there, he knocked and then beat on the door, but no one answered. He was about to try to find a landlord or just kick it in when he thought he'd try the knob. It turned easily. Stepping past the entry hall and into the living room, he saw the computer first. The laptop monitor was a pure blazing white now, a stark contrast with the dark red handprint pressed in the middle of that glowing field. Subsequent testing would show that it was a mixture of Jacob and Holly's blood. Dave's eyes were already moving on, because as he turned from the monitor to look for Jacob or Holly themselves, he saw her hanging 2 feet off the ground, her face blue and her neck purple from thick, black fishing line that had once been wrapped around the red USB stick and was now coiled tightly around her throat, the other end terminating in a rat's nest of twists and ties around several large screw eye bolts that had been drilled into the wall. Subsequent autopsy found a paralytic agent in Miss Jenner's system as well as a small puncture wound on her throat. It was believed that the paralytic was administered in the tip of a large needle, perhaps consistent with the hidden tooth in the ring described by Jacob, but never recovered. The current theory is that she was alive but unable to escape as Jacob screwed the eye bolts into the wall stud to support her weight, wrapped the fishing line around her throat, and then pulled her into position before securing the end of the line. There were no signs of a struggle, but a small cut on the bottom of her foot, as well as drops of blood found underneath where she was found, made it likely that she was bled while choking to death, and that this blood, along with some of Jacob's own, was utilized before he left the scene. Because thus far, Jacob has never been seen again. While his writings were recovered from his laptop, no sign of the game itself was ever found, though we know the game did exist from Dave Thresh's statements, Jacob's written words, and miscellaneous items such as text conversations and the recording Dave made the last time he saw his friend. Attempts to contact Gaylord and Real or obtain the USB from him have so far failed, the last record of his movements being on the manifest of a private jet heading out of the country 2 days after the murder of Holly Jenner. As for Jacob's writings, aside from a few unrelated text messages and emails in the first few days after he started playing The Return to Malarena, all but one have been faithfully reproduced above. As for the last, it wasn't located on the laptop's hard drive or tucked away in some removable memory found later on. It was, in fact, the most obvious and perhaps profound of everything he wrote about the return to Malarena, though the medium was horrific and the true meaning remains obscure. It was, much like the bloody handprint on the monitor, written in a mixture of his blood and that of his sacrifice. Crimson letters long and dripping in an arc above that poor girl's head. Just one line of revelation or warning, or both. It's not a window. It's a door. Well, that was one hell of a story. I hope you all liked it. I know I did, and obviously there's a little bit of a connection there to one of Brandon's previous stories. If I've read it on the channel before, I'll try to link it in the description or in the top comment below, so you can kind of piece together everything. Before I get into thanking all the patrons and members, I want to ask you all a question. Given that the game in this story was kind of based off very, I don't want to say old, but very classic, like first video games, you know, the very simple text-based kind of things, I'm curious, and I think I may know where this is going to go for some of you, given my demographic, what was the first video game you ever played? Just taking a wild guess, I expect to see a lot of maybe Atari 2600, Atari 5200, and maybe some Legend of Zelda on the NES, maybe a few Super Nintendo babies here and there, maybe N64. Me personally, the earliest memory I have of a video game was on a Sega Genesis. It was at my mom's friend's house. Me and my brother would go and hang out with the two little girls that lived there. And they were twins, and we were just really hanging out with each other all the time because my mom really liked their mom. Whatever. Earliest memory I have was playing Sega Genesis with my brother. We played, I guess it would be Sonic 3D Blast, maybe, and then some really, really simple football game. And I didn't understand football at the time, so that didn't really work out too well. So I believe Sega Genesis was the first console I ever really played on. I have a very, very slight memory of a Super Nintendo playing Mortal Kombat at my friend's house, and before that, I can't really remember anything. Most of what I remember is PlayStation 1, Spyro the Dragon, Crash Bandicoot, the Spider-Man games, all of that. That is my bread and butter. All the Tony Hawk games. Oh, man. It just gets so nostalgic just thinking about it. So I'm interested. What is the first video game you remember playing? What's the first console you remember owning yourself and not just like a family console? Mine was an Xbox 360, so kind of tell I'm not that old, but I'm getting there. I feel older every single day. But let me know. I'm really interested to have that conversation. But after all that, I do want to thank all the $5 patrons and members. Absinthe Alice, Alice E, Amethyst, Amet, Caroline, Christina Smith, CT, Deborah Tychus, Elizabeth Watkins, Alice G, Furious Weasel, If in Doubt, Flat Out, Jennifer Dameron, Jesse Jess, Justinia Zaromsky, Karen Parrott, Kat, Kathy Flanning, Lee Riggs, Laura, Lindsay Pruitt, Melody Evans, Melissa Berwick, Mindy Bannon, Moon Potato, Nicholas Moore, Nora, Nova Nocturne, Patricia Rodea, PJ Masks, Ray Clegg, Sentinel, The New Ongoing 24,
Tiger Princess, Tish Love, Triumph, and Victoria Step. Thank you all so much for the continued support. And thank you to everyone who watches or listens to the videos, leaves a like, leaves a comment. I appreciate all of you. I hope you all have a wonderful day, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are. And as always, stay safe out there.